Federal Drive is presented by GEHA, Government Employees Health Association, proudly providing health and dental benefits to federal employees and their families. Visit GEHA.com.
Each passing year, U.S. politics seems to get uglier and more perverse. So much more reason, then, to celebrate public servants whose goal in life is high-quality mission delivery. And that's what this year's Service to America Medal's finalists just announced demonstrate. Commitment to the mission and to the finest in public service. Joining Federal Drive host Tom Temin, as he does every year for a preview, the president and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service, Max Steyer.
Golly, you know, looking at the list of finalists, which are just out really this morning or came out last night, the breadth of areas that touch so much of American life, land management and forestry, drug safety, tax administration, even the operation of the government itself, the breadth of areas that the SAMMY's finalists cover is really impressive.
Absolutely. And it's worth noting that we had over 530 nominations this year. And what you're seeing is the impossible task of choosing extraordinary people among amazing people. And you're right, it covers the warp. There are 14 different cabinet agencies that are represented here, 25 finalist groups, there are 43 total people. And it does mean that we've got a government that's working on all cylinders and helping us in a myriad of ways. Just to add on to some of the examples you gave, you know, wonderful story of the Department of Labor inspectors saving children from being forced to work in dangerous and unhealthy environments and looking to save the bee industry, which is so fundamental to our agricultural system, to the incredible story of the amazingly quick repair of the interstate in Pennsylvania. I mean, it goes on and on and on, and it's a plentiful set of incredible people doing a very important work for the American people.
One of the ones of the many that stood out shows that even in places like the White House, which are just nothing but lightning rods nowadays, but Kyle Gardner is a senior policy analyst, and this is a career person. This is not somebody who's Trump or Biden or anything. Office of Management and Budget, streamlining burdensome government forms. You know, even in the digital age, there is plenty of room for reform in that manner. And there's somebody deep in OMB. I think the public doesn't appreciate that there are actually civil servants, even within the White House, that do things away from the politics and away from all of that, that have real benefit.
100%. And another additional positive mark in Kyle's favor is that this is the emerging leader category. So that means that these are people who are relatively new to the workplace and yet making an exceptional difference in the work that they are doing. And we have four emerging leader nominees, including Andrea Fletcher, who is doing incredible work at CMS to create online services that help patients dispute unexpected medical bills. You have Sammy Tafoya, who has been spearheading the work to try to help what's happening in Haiti. You have Jerry Ma, who's at the Patent and Trademark Office, who is applying AI technology to improve the innovation agency in our government and beyond. I mean, it's really just a spirit-lifting set of extraordinary people.
The other thing that I see from year to year is the way in which oversight, which can be a little bit contentious among government functionaries, but can also lead to real results. I'm looking at Beza Repko. She's director of physical infrastructure issues at the GAO. She's been on this show, led critical research projects that exposed gaps in vehicle safety features, uncovered shortcomings in the reliability of U.S. rail and highway systems. So this is where someone totally outside, say, of DOT can, yes, oversee them, but also enhance the work they do.
Yes, and I do think the oversight function is fundamental. Some years back, we created the management excellence category as a place of recognition because there's so much about our government that is, as you just noted, the internal functioning is less accessible for people to understand and yet is vital in terms of what is achieved. And another example of that is Mike Schmidt and the CHIPS team that is really at the forefront of trying to ensure that our country has a vibrant CHIPS industry, the brains of the modern digital environment that we live in. And they had to set this up from scratch and have done just an extraordinary job of figuring out how to provide support to the right places to make sure that we have a healthy chip industry in this country, which is a matter of vital importance to us.
We're speaking with Max Steyer, president and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service. And just one more I wanted to note to show how these winners and finalists can be ripped out of the headlines, to use a cliche. Trevor McAleenan, Special IRS Agent, Criminal Investigation Division, and Michael Lane, also of the IRS Criminal Investigation Division, they led a study that led to the seizure of $3 billion of Bitcoin. Boy, that's certainly been in the news in the last year.
Yes, and once more, our government has to keep up with the world around it. Law enforcement is an age-old responsibility of our government, but plainly, things like cryptocurrencies is a new world. And it does, I think, highlight the importance of investing in our workforce and getting new talent in so that we have available to us the best-in-class talent for new issues that are arising every day.
And review for us the program that happens now. The finalists have been revealed, but there's a whole lot of events between now and the fall.
Absolutely. So we will be hosting a reception to honor the honorees, and they are finalists. But truth be told, there's really no good way of distinguishing them from the ultimate winners other than we have a selection committee of prominent government, business, philanthropic leaders that will select among them. Not a job that one should envy. And we'll have a gala, ultimately, to recognize everybody, but especially those winners at the Kennedy Center on September 11th this year. Plainly an important date in terms of our country and highlighting the value of our government and what it does, because at the end of the day, keeping us safe is the most fundamental responsibility of our government. So lots to do here to celebrate them. It's so important. This is Public Service Recognition Week, and if we want the success as a society that we have to continue, we really need to respect, honor, and support the civil servants that are day in, day out, night in, night out, making sure that we are protected and helped in so many different ways.
And if you look at the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey scores and so forth, and look at the energy that goes into the work that results in SAMMY Awards and so on, it's remarkable the degree that, and I see this in my daily interactions with feds, is yes, there's all of these stories going on about, unelected bureaucrats doing this or that, and this agency is all political, and the headlines. But it doesn't really penetrate to them that much, to their daily lives. They really seem to almost chuckle at it and have the ability to just to go on and keep their head pointed to where it needs to be to get the job done and let the rest of that stuff just filter out.
Yes. I mean, I think the challenge, though, is we should not take these people for granted. And that's the intent here. You're right. There are a lot of headlines challenging our current system. The truth of the matter, though, is that we are blessed with a government made up of people who are expert, that are nonpartisan, and that are in their jobs to serve the public. And that's something that enables us to meet the challenges of the day. Most countries in the world do not have this, and most countries, therefore, do not have the opportunities that we have here in our country. And if we do not take care of it, if we do not invest in those people, we won't. This is not a foregone conclusion that this is the way it has to be here. And I think that is part and parcel of Public Service Recognition Week, of the SAMMYs, as you say, Best Places to Work, which is really a way of looking at organizational health. We need leaders in government and outside government who are really committed to and prioritizing the people of government and keeping up with the world around us.
And finally, we should point out to people that might be tuning into the SAMMYs idea for the first time, SAMMY, there was a Sam that this is all named after. Maybe remind us of that great Samuel.
Yes. And so it's interesting, though, because this program started, it's one of our very first program almost 23 years ago. It's Service to America Medals. And obviously, we played off the Uncle Sam notion, but our founder was Samuel J. Heyman. When he passed away, we chose to recognize him through this program. It's just a coincidence that his name is Samuel, and so it fit particularly well here. But again, he was a businessman who recognized that, he could not be a successful businessman or a successful and safe American without the best in class going into government, and he wanted to make sure that happened. So this is our way of doffing our hat at him, at his ideas, and his support for the Partnership for Public Service.
Max Steyer is president and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service, speaking there with Federal Drive host Tom Temin. We'll post this interview along with a link to more information about this year's SAMMYs finalists at federalnewsnetwork.com/federaldrive. Be sure to tune in every week as we interview some of those finalists up until the actual award ceremony. You can also hear the Federal Drive on demand. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Leadership today, especially within the federal workforce, is being tested more than ever before. As the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's Chief People Officer, Elizabeth Comstetter sees a focus on people as absolutely crucial to her leadership style. Comstetter joined Shane Canfield, WEPA CEO, to reflect on her years of experience leading in the federal human capital space.
Hello, and welcome to the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I'm your host, Shane Canfield, CEO of WEPA. Today I'm joined by Dr. Elizabeth Comstetter, Chief People Officer at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
In your current position at CISA, one of your responsibilities is ensuring a people-first culture. Explain what that is, and what's the role of leadership in creating and shaping that culture?
Yes, at CISA, really paramount to our culture is a people-first driven aspect, so that we are really looking at how do we accomplish our mission through our people. And in order to do that, we really value our people. We want them to feel empowered and supported and respected, and also that their managers care about them. So well-being is important. Psychological safety in the workplace is important, so that all voices and ideas are heard. So I like to call it our North Star. Having a people-first culture really starts with the people in order to get our incredibly difficult mission accomplished. In terms of leadership, which is a great question, I think we all know that culture is really driven by leadership and the behaviors that we allow and we reinforce in our leaders. So we really work at making sure that our leaders are bringing out the best in their people every day. So again, that they feel they can bring their voice, especially an opinion that might not go along with the majority of a group, so that we get that diverse perspective. We get those different ideas and experiences. And that's really where we find that it's important that leaders are purposefully bringing out their talent on their teams to enable our mission.
Yeah, excellent. We're going through a culture project at our work.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's been 6 months in the making, and it's going really well, but it is work.
Yes.
And it requires from the top down. So I'm also involved in that. I hear you.
Great.
Throughout your career, you've piloted many different talent management programs, including at NASA, the CIA, the FBI, just to name a few, and you have an amazing career. What have you learned, or how have you might have changed along the way in creating and leading those programs?
Yes, and I am so honored to have had a career in public service across multiple federal agencies, always in the realm of human resources and workforce performance. And I think because I study organizations and people in them, I've come to realize, particularly in the federal government, that many of our programs are really grounded in the industrial era thinking, that this is organizationally structured in a hierarchy with boxes and lines on charts, with the center being around jobs and what do we need to get this job done in terms of skills and training. And what I found is that we're really not in the industrial era anymore, where we would promote the smartest people who knew that work, and they would then tell the people on their team how to do things and oversee that work. We're now in a digital era and the information era, where work gets done collaboratively across geographic boundaries and certainly across org charts. So we like to call it networks or hierarchies, and we really need to, again, unleash people so they can find those other people who are working on similar problems or have the right ideas. And so I really like to think of our work now in the talent programs being human-centered. It's more about the user and the experience than about the rules and regulations. So although we have to have rules and regulations, certainly in human resources, is that person experiencing what they need and getting what they need for their role at that time? So not so much on the job, but on the person. So for example, we're recruiting. What's the applicant experiencing? Because if they're not having a good experience with our organization from the time we're recruiting them, they're going to go work for somebody else. Same thing with like first-time supervisors. We know they need certain training, but telling them to sit in a class for 1 week and then hope a year from now they'll remember what they learned to apply, that's not really human-centered. The human-centered is, What do they need when they need it? And building modules or just-in-time training and bringing that to the people, to that user, as they need it. So that's really, I think, the most important focus of talent programs today in this era to enable the workers to be the best they can be in their roles.
Excellent. New thinking. This is always an interesting question. Has there been a time when, as a leader, that you've made a mistake? And what is that? And I think most important, what did you take away from that? What did you learn from that?
Well, I kind of chuckle because I think as leaders, we have to learn to recognize our mistakes, admit our mistakes, and that they are opportunities to learn. And so I've had to do my own self-reflection on making mistakes and when things don't turn out the way that I expected them to. Makes me think of a time when I was at the Transportation Security Administration and I was a supervisor. And I was really embroiled with my program. I was the technical leader of it. I understood it. I'd run it for years. And I was making a briefing for a decision that had to be made about this program that was very near and dear to me. And I presented the briefing to one of the very senior people in the agency. And I think there are about 20 people in the room. And I had gone through the briefing, answered all the questions, and that leader then said, okay, I'm going to go around the room and get everybody's opinion, and then everybody gets to vote, which kind of set me aback because there were people in that room that didn't have any technical knowledge about my program. She even turned to the executive assistant there, taking notes on the meeting, and said, go ahead, and I want to hear from you. And I realized in hindsight, I had stopped listening. I had been in transmitting all of my knowledge and what I saw to be the right way, and I was not listening to different perspectives in the room because I didn't think that, I didn't value that they were bringing any kind of input to this particular decision. And it didn't go as I had hoped, and I left very disappointed and was busy blaming the senior leader and how that meeting was conducted, that she let all these people have opinions when they didn't know, in my mind, didn't know what they were talking about. And so in reflection on that, I realize, and now as I've moved into more senior leadership positions, I realize that was a mistake, that it actually is really important to listen, especially to people who have different perspectives or at a different point in the career, not just the people who know the program or the technical really well. And so that was a mistake I made, and I realized in my own sense I wasn't listening to very different opinions, and I probably should have because I would have learned more about what was needed for this program going forward than just leaving, getting upset that it didn't go a certain way. So I've really practiced active listening. I've practiced making sure there's very different people on teams and certainly on committees or councils, that we need early careers, people new to the agency, people who haven't walked in the shoes of the technical workforce, because they're asking questions we need to hear for these programs to be successful.
Excellent. Your career in talent management means your work is very closely tied to people. And even your title, Chief People Officer, what does that mean to you to be a leader in the federal system with that focus?
Isn't that a great title? I just love the title Chief People Officer, and I think it's my dream job, really, to be focused on people and culture and the workforce strategy for the whole agency. And I'm just so excited to be at CISA at this point in time. We're only 4 years young as an agency, so we're really still creating who we're going to become as an agency and what is our culture. And what kind of people and talent do we need to be sure we have to be successful? So it's very exciting for me to be in this role with a intentional focus on culture, because it's one of those things, if you leave it to chance and you kind of hope it goes the way you want it to, it probably won't. So by building programs, including leadership development programs, including any kind of training and learning and career growth, and engagement programs and listening programs, that's what's really key for, I think, for our agency, and particularly me in this role. I think in the federal government, we got used to doing annual survey, the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey that OPM, Office of Personnel Management, runs every year. So we would do a survey and we'd read it and we'd say, oh, this is the opinion of our people. And then we would do action plans and then we'd roll out certain activities that we would hope would increase engagement. In this era, you can't do once a year and understand what your employees' experiences are, what they need, what's working well, and what needs to improve. We need active, ongoing listening programs. So one of the things we're doing at CISA is having more pulse surveys, having more focus groups and what we call sensing sessions, expecting our leaders to have office hours where anybody can come and just talk about what's going well, what do they need, how are things going? Because we feel like it is an ongoing need to hear from our people. And I think in this role and over the years of serving, I've also realized there's never a one-size-fits-all. You know, we think certain people need certain things at certain times in their career. There's no one-size-fits-all. Neither can we also customize everything to every individual. So there's got to be a sweet spot in building really great talent programs, but also, like I said, thinking about, can we do this in modules? Can we make it a menu? Can we do it just in time as people need it so they can practice the new skill or knowledge in their role? So I think we have such great opportunity, again, with the technology that enables us to really focus on how we connect people with their work and their team to get things done in very new ways.
This is always an interesting question. Is there a figure, either from your personal life, your past, somewhere in history generally, that inspired you, your leadership style, how you view leadership?
There are many figures who have been very inspirational to me, but there is one that sticks out, and that's my mother, Paula Brownlee, who has been a very inspiring leader to me all my life. And I think because, first and foremost, she had a strong family and a strong career, and that's something I always wanted. And I saw her first as my mother, but then I also saw her as a leader in her career and in academia, which was her chosen field. But I always knew her family came first. And as I saw how she balanced different family needs with also a growing and more prominent career positions in leadership, that she had to balance that. And I think I learned from her that you can have both. You have to focus on different things through your career and through your life, but that you don't have to trade one for the other. I've been married, happily married for 32 years, and I'm a mother of twins who are almost 24 years old. So, and I've had a great career in public service. So I think that having her as a role model has really helped me find my own courage, find my own confidence, and find my own voice in how I can prioritize the things that are most important to me so that I can actually balance both family and career.
And you're doing it well. Thank you. Having known you now for 7 or 8 years and worked alongside you, your passion is infectious.
Thank you.
Your intelligence and the thoughtfulness with which you approach all of these issues, it's an honor for you to be here, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
I'm Shane Canfield, CEO at WEPA, and until next time, have a great day.
Find the full podcast and future episodes of Lessons in Leadership on the Federal News Network app and anywhere you enjoy your podcasts.